was, "Holy hell! Lore!" The rubber band stringing my muscles too tight vanished, and my face exploded in a 100-megawatt smile. I flung myself into the tall blonde man's arms and was rewarded with an enormous crushing bear hug as the ever-up-for-a-party Viking swept me off my feet and spun me round. When he finally put me back down, I was still grinning like an idiot until he flashed me a wolfish smile and said,
"Honey, you've been running my ass ragged for 2 goddamn eternal years. I'm so fucking glad the boss is back. Might have time to get laid again."
My smile vanished. "Wait, what?"
"Laid. I might get laid."
"I heard that part. That's a given with you. I don't need to hear it. 2 years? Running your ass ragged?"
"Watching you. Making sure you stayed out of trouble."
I strained every tendon in my right hand by fisting it too tightly. "You've been here, in Dublin, for 2 years? Right here?" He nodded happily.
"Thought I was going to have to save you from those slimy bastards the other night, but you took care of them just fine, honey."
It wasn't penetrating for some reason. Probably because the thought was so odious I was barring it entrance to my mind. "Let me get this straight. For the past 2 years, you've been here in Dublin. Like, within feet of me. Tailing me. Hiding from me." I knew he could. The Nine can out-super me any time. It infuriates me. His grin widened.
"Uh-huh. Damn good, wasn't I? You never caught on."
My nostrils flared. "And why would you do such an offensive thing?" His grin faded and he cut me a dark look.
"Christ, women, I don't get you. I protect you, you get pissy. I don't protect you, you get pissy. I open doors, I'm patronizing. I don't open doors, I'm a caveman. Which, by the way, I am. What the bipolar fuck? Beginning to think you babes don't have any clue what you want, or change your mind constantly just to dick with us."
"I'm not getting pissy because you were protecting me, although I fail to see how you were, given you never once appeared or did anything to help me. I handled everything by myself, and while I'll never argue with backup, the precise term for what you were doing is snooping, equivalent to spying on me against my will. Undoubtedly on the orders of that interfering, domineering dickhead. I needed a friend, Lore, not a bloody invisible shield."
"Boss don't listen to nobody, honey. I told him it'd piss you off,"
I said icily, but he didn't care.
"Don't worry,"
he'd told me in the cemetery that night.
"I've taken precautions. You'll be protected."
He'd also never answered my question about whether all the Nine were leaving. He hadn't lied, but lack of disclosure can be equally offensive.
"Oh, he cared, honey. He always cares about you. Just makes up his own mind and acts on it. Kinda like somebody else I know. You two deserve each other. Two of a bloody, I know better than everyone else kind."
"He and I are not, and will never be, peas in the megapod. In his bloody dreams does he aspire so high. Where is he?" I demanded. Deep, rich, baritone laughter rolled up from the dance floor behind me, down 2 levels.
"Ah, Danny."
And there it was. The voice I hadn't heard in 2 long years, except in unsolicited, unwanted dreams. I shivered as it rolled through me. Same bloody charge, same instant, intense awareness of Riordan as a shatteringly sexual man that I was getting off Lore in shadow. Shit. I preferred that inexplicable shakiness I used to feel in my stomach as a teen to this painfully heightened awareness of the state of my own hormones, and I was not shorting out this time. I inhaled deep and full, slapped a hasty but formidable mental barrier around everything that had anything to do with sex, boxed it, coated it with pure titanium. I was no longer a child, and wouldn't act like one.
I'm right here, kid.
Kid. My vision hazed crimson with blood lust, and my mind sharpened to a painful degree of acuity. Lore groaned.
Oh, hell, honey. Don't do it.
I blinked into the slipstream, graceful as a gazelle, hungry as a lion. I know every inch of this club like the back of my hand. My percentages had shifted. I was 1 measly percent glad he was back, 99% committed to kicking his insufferable ass. 17. How could you leave me when I needed to possess you? I hated you. I slammed into Raiden at top speed, a grenade with a pin out, fists flying. I hit him so hard, we hurtled into a marble column that shuddered satisfyingly from the impact. Then I grabbed him, hurling him away from it, and heaved him into a wall. He wasn't hitting me back. He wasn't even resisting. And that pissed me off even more. I launched myself at him again, peeled him off the wall and flung him across the room. He blasted into a pallet of lumber. With such force, wood exploded and went flying in all directions. Dimly, I registered the stunned faces of the workers. Dimly, I registered that I was behaving alarmingly like I had in my youth. I didn't care. Kick up into the slipstream, I snarled at him. He wasn't even joining me. Just hanging down there in slow-mo Joe world where everyone could see him, letting me beat on him. It must have looked to them as if he were being hurled about the room by an irascible Tasmanian devil. He stood, dusting off his crisp, well-tailored clothing, crossed his arms over his chest, and caught me a hard, warning look.
Good to see you too, Danny.
He wasn't even bleeding anywhere. What was I? Innocuous? I thudded down from the slipstream with thunder in my boots and snarled, I didn't say it was good to see ya, and I don't think it, you bastard. Kick up. Fight with me.
Why would I do that?
And don't talk to me without talking to me. You don't have the right. Stay out of my head. His eyes narrowed.
Might mix.
I bulleted into the slipstream again, cutting him off. That was it. I was not listening to a single word of his condescending might makes right or possession is 9/10 of the law crap or any of his other immortal philosophy. Sometimes there's only one way to resolve things. Get down and dirty and brawl. And by God, he was going to brawl with me and I was going to vent my outrage on his unbreakable body over the many things he'd done to prick and offend me. I exploded into him again. Hitting him so hard we erupted into the air, carrying him backward with my body to lam him into another column with such intensity, the pillar cracked from ceiling to floor. We slid down it together, me gripping his collar with both hands. He'd left me for 2 years. Never once texted me, never called, left Lore here, hidden from me, beyond my reach. It didn't appease me at all to think Lore might have kept him apprised of my well-being. That didn't count in my book. Then he'd come back, let me save his life, and stalked off without a word. Called me kid. As I was about to slam my fist into his face and drive his head back into the column to see if I could collapse it with my next blow, the column, not his face, Raiden yanked me out of the slipstream, plucked me by a sleeve, and smoothly dragged me down into the real world, with real world consequences, where the painful things are, and forced me to stay still, one big hand manacled around my wrist.
What?
He said very softly.
Is your problem, Danny?
My problem? I wasn't the one with problems. I glared at him. Our faces were so close. I could see the tiny crimson sparks glittering in his ice-grey eyes. Ancient, inhuman eyes. Clear and cool. He wasn't even breathing hard. I was panting. I drew my free hand back to smash my fist into his infuriatingly composed face. But my clearly possessed hand grabbed a fistful of his short dark hair instead, and yanked his face to mine while my clearly insane mouth ground itself against his. A frenzy of lust exploded inside me. Years of loneliness. Years of frustrated hunger. Years of missing him. I kissed him like he was the battlefield I was born to wage all my wars on. I kissed him like he was the only king this Amazon warrior might ever take her army into combat for. I kissed him like we were primal, lethal beasts, fearlessly stalking those violent, killing no man's lands where angels feared to tread, and I kissed him with a hunger that's never once been slaked, as I unleash all the fire and fury and savagery in my soul, and there is one fuck of a lot of it. He groaned roughly, hands slipping to my ass, yanking me closer, if closer were even possible, when I was already plastered to him like a second skin. Then my kiss changed, and I kissed him with every ounce of raw, aching loneliness in my all-too-human flesh and bones. Every haunted, painfully bared shred of me that was tired of reaching with the intensity and intent of life, and touching nothing. Because I can't fuck normal men. They don't get me any more than I get them, and I walk away, colder and lonelier than before. I kissed him with the rainbow-colored shattered hopes and dreams of a child betrayed in ways too damaging and numerous to count, and I kissed him with a yearning to be the one making joy blaze from his eyes. I ground my body against his and kissed him like he was the only man I deemed complex, brilliant, and strong enough to be worth kissing, and I kissed him as if he were made of bone china. A man who'd known little tenderness in his life, because he always had to be strong, like me, because he could, like me, and the world needed him, like me. And that's what you do when you fit the bill. I kissed him with devotion, with raw sexual reverence, starved to cut loose like this. I offered him my prayer, my challenge, the one that had gone eternally unanswered. Are you there? Are you as painfully alive and aware as me? Can you feel how much I'm giving you when I touch you like this? Are you worth me? In other words, to my complete and utter horror, I kissed Riordan with my whole heart. And that fuck so did not deserve it. I exploded backward, scrabbling away from him. Stopped. Stood. He stared at me. Eyes full crimson, lust burning in them with such intensity, I gasped raggedly and took another step back. I'd woken a beast, and at that moment, wasn't entirely certain it could be returned to slumber. He lunged forward, checked himself, and stopped, hands fisted at his sides. I dragged my gaze from his, looked around. Every eye in the room was on me. I don't even know why I just did that, I thought. Then I realized, to my complete and utter horror, I'd said the words aloud.
Well, if you're feeling the need for another moment, hour, or even year like that,
said one of the strapping laborers in a husky voice,
I'd be happy to volunteer. You're fired,
Riordan snarled. Without bothering to look at the man. He inhaled slow and deep, crossed his arms again and leaned back against the cracked marble column, staring at me with blazing crimson eyes. Not sparks. Pure, undiluted beast flamed in his gaze. Fangs glinted at his mouth. I hissed, No, he's not. You don't fire people just because you don't like what they said. You fire people if they don't do the job right. He needs the work. You're not firing him.
Ah, Danny,
he said tightly.
You beat me. You tell me what to do. I seem to have forgotten which of us is the man. Perhaps you need a reminder.
I had no doubt what kind of reminder he had in mind.
You opened this door.
Blood-red eyes fired. And I'm closing it, I shot back.
Try, woman.
His lips curved with a dark smile, full of promise that he'd heard every word I'd said with my body and wasn't about to let me forget a single one of them. My emotions were all over the place. Every blasted one of them lit up, sparking. While he was gone, I'd had countless conversations with him, enumerating with elaborate, scathing details the many grievances I held against him. I'd lambasted him with witty, brilliant, incisive remarks. I'd reduced him to an apologizing, contrite male, eager to get back in my good graces. I couldn't come up with a single thing. I mean, a single thing to say. Bloody hell. Someone had extracted my brain from my skull and stuffed cotton balls in the empty compartment. I hefted the titanic weight of my humiliation and embarrassment up into the slipstream, blasted up the stairs, and exploded out the door with it.
Good damn,
Lore said roughly. He cleared his throat and said again,
God damn! Boss, that must have been worth every ounce of the beating she gave you, plus a shit ton more. Think I need a cold shower. Nah, 5 blondes.
Men laughed, murmuring agreement. Face hot, cheeks flaming. I didn't linger to hear Riordan's reply. 18. A soul in tension is learning to fly. Condition, grounded. The kiss went in a box. The entire debacle at Chester's did. I simply pretended it hadn't happened and went about my day. People waste so much time mulling over things they've done when all the mulling in the world neither undoes nor changes one iota of what you did. The only thing that alters the unsatisfying state in which you've left things is future action. Either never see the person again, or see them and do something to set the record straight. Like, lie. Claim you were possessed by a gripper. Backpedal hard and fast. I had no doubt I'd see the bastard again, and since I hadn't wasted all that time in the interim annoying myself, I'd be cool, composed, and capable of redressing the facts. Somehow. I spent several hours visiting the homes on my list, and was pleased to be able to clear both of them to place children. When I called Rainey, she was delighted I'd found her choices acceptable. To date, she'd never picked a home I'd deemed lacking. Her record was impeccable, and I was beginning to develop a pleasant degree of trust in our working relationship. I also popped into the annoyingly bright, annoyingly modern Baines bookstore. I refused to give it 3 Bs, it didn't deserve them, and left with a bag of books. Ireland's Legends, a concise summary of the Book of Invasions, When Druids Walked the Earth, Giants and Kings of Ireland, an encyclopedia of Celtic mythology, plus 2 of my favourite iconic graphic novels in pristine condition, Batman's Arkham Asylum and Batman Whatever Happened to the Caped Crusader. I was headed back to my flat to hunt for Shazam, as I'd grown increasingly concerned about his recent long absences, when my back pocket vibrated with a text alert. I swear to God my ass knew who it was from. I'd received multiple texts today, from Rainey, Cat, a few of my friends and birds checking in. But this one was different. It practically bit my ass through my jeans. Riordan. His words in my back pocket. Even those had fangs. Scowling, I whipped it out, tidily boxed recent events threatening to erupt in my skull.
Pick you up at 8. Wear a dress.
My eyebrows climbed my forehead and vanished into my scalp. Seriously? Furious thumbs flew over the keys as I typed Baron's words from a few years ago. He'd been right. All caps make it look like you're shouting at me. His reply came so swiftly, I swear he'd already had it typed and ready.
I was. You'll never listen otherwise.
Wear a dress, I fumed, steam building in my head. I know Riordan, and he knows me. which meant he knew telling me to wear a dress would pretty much guarantee I'd choose anything but a dress. But you have to take things a little further with that man, because that's how he thinks, always looking ahead. Since he knew telling me to wear a dress would make me choose something else, and he also knew I was fully aware of how his manipulative brain worked, he knew I'd ultimately decide to wear the bloody dress just to prove I wasn't being manipulated by him. So he'd get me in a dress either way. This was a complete clusterfuck. How did I win? By wearing a dress or not? I now fully and completely understood why that woman had gone into battle with Sherlock naked. The only way I could win was by not being there to be picked up at 8. My screen flashed at that precise instant with a new text from him.
This isn't about us. Our city is in trouble. Be there.
Oh, screw you, I growled. Right, provoke my innate, highly dysmorphic sense of personal responsibility. I shoved my phone back in my pocket, resisting the urge to mute further texts. I wouldn't let him make me let my city down by not being there if someone in need texted me. I was storming back to my flat to demand Shazam's presence and counsel when I saw one of them. A bird with a broken wing, maybe two. I sighed and circled back to a food vendor, placed my order, rearranging priorities, watching her from the corner of my eye where she huddled on a bench outside a pub, trembling and pale, badly bruised. I didn't know her story, and didn't need to. I knew the look. This was a pervasive problem. The disenfranchised could be found on nearly every corner of every street in every city in our world. Their stories were some version of this. Their families, slash children, slash lover, got killed when the walls fell, and they lost their job. They watched their siblings, slash friends, slash parents, get seduced and destroyed by Seelie or Unseelie. The worst of humans had preyed on them. Glassy-eyed, sludge-brained, terrorized, once victimized, they were prey magnets. Not everyone was as lucky as me. Not everyone had a hard life, so when the going gets tough, they don't know how to get going. Here, eat. I offered the woman the sandwich I'd just bought. She was young, too pretty to go unnoticed, thin. Trembling, she raised her head and looked at me. Shock glazed her eyes. Fear blanched her skin to snow. She made no move for the wax paper-wrapped food, and if she didn't take it soon, I might fall on it myself. It was one of my favorites. A hot, breaded, fresh-caught fish and tartar sauce delight, nestled in a sesame bun with chips dripping grease. I'm Danny, I said, settling on the far end of her bench, keeping the bulk of it between us so she wouldn't feel cornered. I help the folks that need it. Take the sandwich and eat it. I don't want anything from you. But if you stay here, some bastard is going to hurt you worse than you've already been hurt. Do you understand? She flinched. Someone had beaten her. Recently. Her lower lip was split, and one eye freshly swollen shut. I know bruises. Her eye and half her cheek would be black before nightfall. She knew she was vulnerable, but whatever happened had left her fractured, unable to make decisions. She was here because she had no ground to go to, no one to take care of her while she regained, or learned to have for the first time, fighting strength. That's where I come in. Seriously, you'll feel better after you eat. Here's a soda. Drink it. Sugar makes everything look better. I place the can gently on the bench in the expanse between us. After a moment, she snatched the sandwich from my hand and took the soda. When she fumbled trying to pop the flip-top, I reached for it to help, and she flinched again. Easy. I'm just going to open the can, I said. The backs of her hands were scraped nearly raw. Blood-stained nails, broken to the quick. She took her first bite of the sandwich with seeming revulsion, chewed automatically, swallowed hard. The second went down the same way. Then I saw what I always hope to see, but don't always get. She fell on the food ravenously, tearing off big chunks, cramming them in her mouth, shoving chips in alongside, smearing tartar sauce and grease on her chin. Her body was hungry and, despite its trauma, wanted to live. Now, I just had to get her mind back in line with it. When she was finished, she slumped against the wooden slats of the bench, wiping her face with a stained, frayed sleeve. "I don't know what happened, and don't need to," I said quietly. "I'm offering to take you to a flat I keep stocked with food, water, everything you need. I have dozens of places like it around the city for folks that need them. This one's yours for 30 days. You can stay there while you work through whatever you're dealing with. Eat, sleep, and shower in peace. Periodically, I'll drop by to make sure you're okay." Usually in a week, they were ready to talk. Needed to. I offered 30 days because a time limit was pressure, and a firm hand lends shape to Play-Doh. If they needed more than 30 days, and were earnestly trying to recover, they got it. She cleared her throat, and when her voice came out, it was gravelly, hoarse, as if she'd recently been screaming. But no one heard, and no one came. "Why?" she said. "Because every man, woman, or child we lose in this world, I take personally."
"Why?"
"It's just the way I'm wired."
"What do you want in return?"
"For you to get angry, heal, maybe join those of us trying to make a difference. Do you do drugs?" That was a defining factor. Hardcore drug users I usually lose. So many broken winged birds, I try to focus on the ones with the greatest odds of success.
"No,"
she said, with the first trace of animation I'd seen, a flash of faint indignation. "Good."
"Are you for real, kid?"
she said sharply, emphasis on kid. Anger was common. Belittle me, drive me away. It never worked. "As if you're much older than me," I scoffed. "I'm 23. I erred on the farthest side of my age to establish credibility. And they were hard years. Her sharpness vanished. It took energy, and birds had little to spare when it was all caught up in an inner cyclone whirling around whatever horrible thing they'd endured. Kicking up so much internal debris, it was hard to see anything clearly.
"I'm 25,
she whispered.
"Birthday was yesterday."
That was harsh. I'd had a few rough birthdays myself. I wasn't stupid enough to wish her a happy birthday. Sometimes, there's no such thing. I fished again for her name, to make that fragile first connection. "I'm Danny." Her nostrils flared.
"I heard you the first time."
"And you are?"
"Not carrying a sword, assorted guns and weapons."
She made it sound like an insult. I said lightly, "Well, stick with me and we'll remedy the shit out of that." Her eyes went flat again, and she said on a soft, exhausted exhale,
"I'm not a fighter."
"Then you're a dyer?" There were only two positions in my book. A long silence then.
"I don't want to be."
"That's a start. Do you think the world is going to get nicer?" She began to cry, silent tears slipping down her cheeks. I knew better than to pat her hand in a gesture of comfort. Birds have hair triggers. You couldn't invade their space or they half flew, half scrabbled away. You had to talk easy. Focus on getting them to safety. Whatever she'd survived, it had happened very recently. From the way she'd commented about her birthday, I suspected yesterday. I said, "I'm standing now. I'm going to start walking. Follow me and I'll get you off the streets. You'll have 30 days, taken care of, fed, and housed, to decide what you want to be when you grow up." I flung the thorn. It pricked. She bristled minutely.
"I am grown up."
"If this is your finished product, you're in trouble." I pushed up and stalked off. Not slow, either. They had to want to come.
Wait, she said behind me. I'm hurt. I can't walk as fast as you.
Because she couldn't see my face, I allowed myself a smile. I showed her around the flat, emphasizing the many deadbolts on the inside of the door, the food in the pantry, the way you had to jockey the stove knobs to get them to work. I didn't open the fridge. I'd grab Shazam's blood on the way out. She walked woodenly to the bedroom, stood staring blankly at the bed, storms rushing behind her eyes. When bad things happen, you relive them for a while, keep seeing them over and over. Psychiatrists call it intrusive thoughts, but that makes it sound like they're infrequent and intrude into normal thoughts. There are no normal thoughts in the near aftermath. You're trapped in a movie theater that's playing a horror flick over and over, and you can't escape because somebody locked all the doors and the film's rolling on every wall. Unless you get angry enough to break down a door. Some things aren't worth analyzing. You leave them behind. Actus me in vito factus non est meus actus. Then there are those actions you choose to make that shouldn't be analyzed either. If I can't make them angry the right way, and there are loads of wrong ones, I invariably lose them. She had no purse, no money. Her clothes were torn and dirty. Her oversized man's shirt, an obvious pilfer. An employee shirt from an out-of-business petrol station with the name Paddy emblazoned on the pocket. You got a phone, I said. She nodded and fished it awkwardly from the shirt pocket. Put my number in it. I rattled off the digits and watched her type them in. If you want to leave the flat, text me. Me or one of my friends will come get you. My goal is to keep you safe and alive until your head clears. Got it?
Got it, she whispered.
You want anything, text. Do you need a doctor? She shook her head.
I'll heal.
Her body would. We'd see about the rest. Your name?
Roisin,
she said numbly. Connection made.
Cool.
I turned to walk away when I felt her hand on my shoulder and turned back to her. Then she was hugging me, and I thought, shit, if she touches my head, I might blow her up. So I was even more awkward than I usually am when someone hugs me out of the blue. But I figured it out and sort of patted her comfortingly on the back while trying to keep her away from my neck and head. She gasped with pain and stumbled away. When she turned her back to me, I saw blood on her shirt, blossoming over her right shoulder blade. A considerable amount.
You can go now, she said, tightly.
Not because she was angry, but because she was barely holding it together. I wanted to demand she show me her back, determine for myself whether she needed a doctor. I know what it's like to have somebody try to zoom in too close to the things I don't want to talk about. Still, I wouldn't be waiting a week to check on her. I'd be there again tomorrow. Morning. With coffee and bandages and the hope a safe night of sleep had calmed her enough that she'd let me take a look. For now, a parting distraction.
Don't freak out if a huge, cat-like thing with violet eyes and a fat white belly pops in. I mean, literally just appears out of thin air.
Don't throw things at him, and whatever you do, don't call him fat. Or even let him know you think he is. He's super sensitive and emotional, gets weepy. He can turn into a huge sobbing mess on you. Just tell him Danny isn't staying here right now, and he'll leave.
Roisin whirled like a jerky puppet who wasn't pulling her own strings.
Wait, what? But I'd already grabbed 5 pints of blood from the fridge, tossed them in a bag, and was out the door. Lock up behind me, I ordered as I closed the door. Shazam always scanned our flats before he materialized. Roisin had nothing to fear. But for a time at least, she'd be worrying about a purple-eyed, emotional, very fat cat appearing, and the hours until she finally slept would pass more easily. I learned young that moments of comedy during the horror show can be a life raft, enough to keep you bobbing in a violent, killing sea. Murderer.
She sold me to the highest bidder. Double-crossing Rowena, my mother sold me on the open market like a prize pig, I learned later, with a video of me trying to freeze frame in my cage, of her making me crush various objects in a tiny fist, accompanied by a detailed list of my superhuman abilities. They came late one night, and I was so excited to see someone besides my mother, or, on the very rare occasion, one of her wasted boyfriends, someone who had surely come to set me free, that I began vibrating. Moving so rapidly from side to side behind bars, I became a mere smudge of white in the wan light of the TV. I was so excited, I couldn't even talk. No one had ever been in our home before, besides my mother and those glassy-eyed, stoned men, and I was terrified she'd come back and prevent my saviors from releasing me. When I finally found my tongue, I said over and over, "Please let me out! Please let me out! You must let me out!" in a stunned kind of daze. These were responsible adults, like the ones on the telly. They wore dark suits and shiny shoes, and had neatly trimmed hair above their collars and ties. These were the kind of people that rescued other people, who came from places like the Child and Family Agency, TUSLA, another word I always saw in my head capitalized, the color of wide-open blue skies. But despite my pleas, they stood in the middle of our shabby living room, with its sagging plaid sofa and scuffed wooden floors, and began to discuss me, as if I wasn't even there. As if I was only super fast and super strong, but super stupid, or super deaf. Eventually, I stopped smudging around in my stunted space and shut up. I drew my knees to my thin chest and huddled behind bars, realizing that some people were born into hell and just never escaped. They said things like limit endurance and stress conditioning. They said things like eggs and artificial insemination and super soldiers. They discussed how best to alter and control me. Then they shocked me through those bars, again and again, sending extreme high voltage arcing into my small body, frying my synapses, reducing me to a quivering puddle on the warm, lumpy pallet that had once been a mattress. They said things like surgical enhancement, and discussed the regions of my brain, the possibility of dissection once they had sufficient stores of reproductive material. They discussed the overdose they'd give my mother, erasing all ties between me and the world. A person alone is a hard thing to be. When I could no longer even twitch, they opened my cage. They opened my cage. Not since that perfect, magical memory bubble of a night years ago that my mother had washed my hair and played games with me at the kitchen table until I'd been too sleepy to see. Not since that night I drifted off in bed next to her with my tiny hands pressed to her cheeks, staring at her while I fell asleep, basking in her love, assured I was the most special thing to her in all the world, had that goddamn door opened. Odor and outside awaited. And I couldn't move. In the periphery of my vision, the outdated, faded calendar with its yellowed, curling edges, on which my mom had stopped crossing off days long ago, mocked me with the awareness that I'd been a naive fool, believing, long past the time I'd been given every conceivable sign that I was nothing to her, and no one was ever going to save me, endlessly believing I mattered, that she cared. Behind them, the telly played a rerun of Happy Days, and I lay paralyzed, synapses charred, watching them bend to grab my feet and drag me from the cage. And I wondered about the kind of people that got Happy Days, and I wondered why mine had been so brief. I had no doubt their cage would be even mightier, my incarceration far more difficult to bear. Sometimes,
Something inside you just breaks. It's not repairable. I died on the floor that night. My heart stopped beating and my soul fled my body. I hated with so much hate that things went dark and I was gone for a few seconds. Then I was back. But every single thing inside me had snapped, changed, rewired. Me, the happy curly-haired kid with such grand dreams, swaggering about, little chest puffed out, waiting, always waiting for someone to love me. When Danielle Megan O'Malley died, someone else was born. Someone far colder and more composed even than the other I'd slipped into so often of late. Jada. I welcomed her. She was necessary to survive this world. She was strong and ruthless and a stone-cold killer. She was human, all too human, yet not human at all. Jada stared up at them as they talked and laughed and removed the length of chain and collar from my neck. Oh, the feel of air on my skin beneath that bloody band. They had handcuffs and chains, a hood. Jada coolly analysed my brain, my body, deciding how the current had altered things, and then Jada undid it all, remaining deceptively passive, helpless, defeated. I remember thinking, God, can't they see her in my eyes? She's judgment. She's death. I've seen her in the mirror since. Don't get me wrong, I don't have multiple personalities. I learned disassociation to deal with the hunger and pain. The other was a cooler, numb version of me. But Jada is the other on steroids. Danny is my foundation. Jada is my fortress. Danielle was my mom's daughter. Jada, the daughter of Morrigan, goddess of war, a mother worth having. Danielle is the one who died. I kept the pure heart. I kept the savage. It was the little girl who loved Emma O'Malley that quit breathing. The moment I was clear of the cage, I kicked up, flashed into freeze frame and ripped out their hearts, one after the next, squeezing each between my fingers until they exploded, dripping blood all over myself, all over the floor. Then, quietly, in my threadbare, blood-stained nightgown, I walked to the kitchen, washed my hands, and ate an entire loaf of stale bread. She hadn't been home in 3 days. I wasn't afraid of her anymore. I was no longer afraid of anything. I took a long, hot shower. God, the bliss, the ecstasy of a shower and soap. God, the bliss of merely standing upright. I dressed in my too short, too small jeans I'd outgrown last year, a faded holy t-shirt, and filched one of my mom's jackets. Then I ate every can of beans in the pantry, all three. Then I turned to the half-soured contents of the fridge. When there was nothing left to eat, I sat at the kitchen table, folded my small hands, and waited. He came first. The man that was supposed to pay her. He didn't bring money. She sold me for drugs. I killed him too, and took them. She came shortly after. Saw the open cage, the dead men in the living room. My memories of that night are crystal clear. It was 3 days to Christmas. The telly was showing an old black and white version of It's a Wonderful Life. The volume was low. The strains of Buffalo Girls, faint but unmistakable, as George Bailey flirted with Mary Hatch beneath a starry sky in a world where people lassoed the moon for each other. She saw me sitting motionless at the table and stood in the doorway a long moment. She didn't try to run. Eventually she joined me at the stained, peeling yellow formica table, trimmed with aluminium, sitting across from me in an orange melamine chair. And we looked at each other for a very long time, neither of us saying a word. Sometimes there's nothing to say. Only things to do. I removed the baggie from my pocket. She gave me her lighter and spoon. I learned almost everything I know about life from TV. I watch things kids shouldn't see. Taking subtle cues from her eyes, a shake of her head, a nod, with 8-year-old fingers and an ancient heart, I cooked my mother's last fix and gave her the needle. Watched her tourniquet her arm and tap the vein. Saw the tracks, the gauntness of her limbs, the flaccid skin, the emptiness in her eyes. She cried then. Not ugly, just eyes welling with tears. The emptiness went away for the briefest of moments. She knew. She knew whatever was in that needle would be her last. If I'd understood more about heroin and fentanyl, I'd have made sure there was enough heroin in the needle to make the dying beautiful. But those sons of bitches must have brought pure fentanyl. She closed her eyes a long moment, then opened them, and poised the needle above her vein. She spoke then, the only words she said to me, achingly slow and achingly tender. Oh, my beautiful, beautiful little girl. The needle pierced her skin, the poison hit her vein. She died ugly, seizing, puking blood. Died with her face in a pool of crimson vomit, on an aged, cracking table, in her own shit, on a cheap chair. I sat at the table for a long time, before I got up and disposed of the bodies. 19. Lady in Red. I wore a bloody dress. Not actually bloody, although I briefly considered it. Shazam hadn't responded to any of my endless inveiglements all afternoon, or I'd have asked his advice, figuring it was 50-50 I'd get a brilliant answer versus a wildly emotional one. Pretty much the same spectrum of answers I was getting from myself. As I turned away from the mirror, I tried one more time. Shazam! I see you, Yee-Yee. Please come down from wherever you are. I'm worried about you, I told the air. You're the most important thing to me in the world. You're my everything. If something's bothering you, we can fix it together. If you want a mate, by God, we'll go scour worlds and find you one. Please, please just let me know you're okay. Nothing. No bodiless smile, hiss or growl. No faint rumbling assurance he still lived and breathed. Same damned silence I'd gotten all afternoon. Okay, this isn't fair, I said, fisting my hands at my waist and glaring up. How would you feel if you couldn't find me and were worried sick? How would you feel if you were aching for pets or brushes and I refused to answer you, or even pay you one tiny bit of attention? If your fur hurt from lack of love and kisses? If I just completely abandoned you and let your heart break all the time until you felt like you might just wither up and...
Okay!
My Hellcat exploded from the air above me and slammed to the closet floor on padded paws, fur spiked, back arched, hissing.
I'm here, all right!
I dropped to my knees and held out my arms. Shaz, baby, what's going on? What's wrong? Why are you avoiding me? He plopped back on his haunches and splayed his paws around his shaggy belly.
I'm just getting used to it,
he snarled. Used to what? I asked, mystified.
You leaving me alone again. You will. Everyone leaves.
I frowned. Where had this fear come from? What had I done to make him think I might leave him? Since the day I'd met him, he'd always liked great chunks of alone time, and, although prone to vibrant, nearly paranoid emotion at times, had never voiced such a concern. To the contrary, he'd seemed to be growing more secure, happy with our home and relationship, until this recent palace cat incident. You know better than that. You and me, we're family, Shaz. Family is forever.
Nuh-uh,
he said truculently, and tears started to flow.
On this planet,
he sniffed,
families hardly ever last. They die or leave for someone else.
Other people's families, maybe. Not us. We're different, and you know that. Have I ever given you any reason to doubt my love for you? My eternal commitment? He wailed.
But it's not eternal. You're not. And I am.
I blinked. I'd never thought about it that way. Was that why he'd become obsessed with finding a mate? Because he'd begun to look ahead to a day I might no longer be here. Even I couldn't see that day. I never think about dying. I'm always too busy living. Is that what this is about? You began thinking one day I'll die and—
Stop!
He clamped tufted paws to his ears.
I can't hear you! I can't hear you! La 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 la!
He droned, tuning me out. I reached for him, dragging his paws dug into the carpet, stoically resisting Pudge, into my arms and hugged him hard and tight, trying to decide how to address this. Actually, trying to wrap my own brain around it. I was mortal, he wasn't. There it was. It hit me like a brick in the face. I'd never projected into the future on this topic, so firmly rooted in the present I'd become future myopic. Hellcats could be killed, although I had no idea what it took and couldn't fathom it. But excluding deadly violence, Shazam would live forever. I was mortal, and he wasn't. Neither was Riordan, or Mac, or Barons. None of my crew was. They were all going to live forever, and I'd be dead in, given the intensity and velocity at which I lived my life, probably long before a ripe old age. As a teen, I used to say I didn't want to live long enough to get old and wrinkly and fall apart. But I had two sudden horrid images. Me living until I was old and wrinkly and falling apart, hanging out with my ageless, immortal friends who were going to go on forever having epic adventures and saving the world, and me dying tomorrow and leaving Shazam alone. He'd be lost without me. He'd go off the deep end. Who would take care of him? Who would be able to handle him? Who would love him like I did? Who would understand his quicksilver moods, his consuming depressions, his bombastic nature, his kaleidoscopic emotions? Dancer, with his fragile heart, had refused the queen of the Fae's elixir of life that would have healed his compromised organ and bestowed immortality at the eventual price of his soul. He died once when he was 8, had seen something, believed in something, and hadn't been willing to sacrifice his immortal soul. The existence of my immortal soul was debatable, as far as I was concerned. Furthermore, if I lost my soul, I'd adapt. I always do. Adaptation is my specialty. I practically invented the word. I removed Shazam's paws from his ears, ignoring the explosion of wails and hisses. Shazzy, I said firmly, I will not die on ya, I promise. He snarled around hiccuping sobs.
Can't make that promise.
You know Mac, right?
Thinks I'm fat and hates Hellcats.
He spat. She does not. She'll give me the elixir of immortality. I'll ask her for it. And if, for some unfathomable reason, she wouldn't or couldn't, there was always Riordan, or Lore, or whatever of the 9 I had to coax, bully, or keep killing until they did for me what they did for Dagus. I will not die, I said sternly. He squirmed in my lap and peered up at me with teary violet eyes, sniffing.
Promise?
Promise. I won't leave you alone. Not ever. Pinky swear.
Pinky swear is everything,
he said, odd, blinking back tears. I'd taught him well. It is, and I'm pinky swearing right now. Show me one of those adorable toes. He raised a paw and spread fat, velvety, black padded appendages. I hooked the pinky of my right hand around his toe.
Not that one. Other.
He said impatiently. It's black. It blows people up.
Not me.
Why is that?
I'm me.
He said smugly.
Better, smarter, more.
Oh, yes. We belonged together. Ego to ego. Emotion to emotion. God, I loved this little beast. Laughing, I hooked finger to toe and said, Shazam O'Malley, I do hereby solemnly swear I am going to love you for all of forever.
Then 9 million more days?
He demanded. Smiling, I finished the vow we'd taken long ago, Silverside. Uh-huh. Because not even all of forever would be enough time to love you.
I die,
he gushed, and fell over on his back, paws in the air, lolling happily. Never leaving you, best friend. You can count on that. Eyes gleaming, rumbling with contentment, he followed me into the bathroom and sank back to his haunches on the counter to watch with keen interest as I did something I rarely did. Put on makeup. Tonight, I was wearing armor. The right dress, the right hair, smoky eyes, and crimson-crushed velvet lips. Since I didn't dare show up naked to battle with Riordan, I was going the opposite route, as the stunning, powerful, sexy woman I can be if I feel like it. Sighing, I thumbed on my flat iron, thinking, what a bloody waste of time. But my mood seems to mimic my hair. When it's a wild cloud, so am I. And tonight, I wanted to be sleek and polished. It takes an unusual thick tree sap I found Silverside to straighten my hair. I brought a leather pouch of the stuff back with me, but I'm almost out. I have no idea what I'll do then. As I began my makeup, a faint rustling sound in the shower drew my attention. In the mirror, I watched the antenna and head of a cockroach pop up from the drain. You never know if a roach is a simple earthborn insect or part of the nefarious Papa Roach that used to hang out at Chester's, preying on the waitresses who'd permitted his vile segments to burrow beneath their skin and eat their fat away. The AWC version of liposuction. Ergo, I treat them all as the enemy. I pretended I hadn't seen it until it cleared the grate, then grabbed a can of hairspray, whirled in freeze frame, and blasted it with a noxious burst, snarling, "Not on my turf, you little shit!" The cockroach hissed at me and gave a whole body violent bristle, choking and sputtering as it vanished back down the drain. Not all redheads wear red well. It has to be the right shade to go with our colouring. My hair is copper flame, my skin snowy, and my dress tonight was blood red. My still black arm and collarbone proved a challenge. I had to keep it covered, although, frankly, blowing Raiden's ass up rather appealed to me at the moment. And hey, he always came back. Still, I'd been unpredictably violent once today, and I tried to limit myself to once in a given 24-hour period. Ergo, my dress had three-quarter sleeves, hugged my body like a second skin, and was cut so low in the back that the tramp stamp at the base of my spine Riordan tattooed on me years ago was beautifully framed, drawing the eye to that sensual hollow. I'm not vain. I'll never be girly. But I do like being a woman every now and then, and I'm grateful for 5 feet 10 inches of strong flesh and bones that has an appealingly lean yet feminine shape. My ass and legs are my best feature, powerfully muscled from endless motion. After taping my neck with Gorilla Tape, because black went better than silver with my ensemble, I slid black and rhinestone stilettos on my bare feet, smudged my smoky eyes one last time, swept my hair up into a sleek, high Lara Croft ponytail, blotted crimson lips, and nodded to myself in the mirror. I debated leaving my hair down to cover the tape, but in a fight, and I was certainly hoping for 1 or 10, My hair unrestrained is a royal pain in my ass. I added the final piece. A 3-inch-wide choker of glittering diamonds and bloodstones that concealed a garrot. Although I hated that it felt like a collar, it covered the tape, held a weapon, and was easily removed.
He doesn't stand a chance,
Shazam rumbled. He who?
The one I smelled on our mattress. He's back. I smelled him on you before. He makes you smell different when he's around.
Okay, that was disturbing. Different? How?
Like Pala's cat makes me smell.
Okay, that was disturbing. I don't think so, I growled. He shrugged.
We deny at our own peril.
What? What do we deny at our own peril?
The cry of the flesh for the Dionysiac experience.
Eyes narrowed, I peered suspiciously at him. Where did you even hear that? Is that from some documentary you watched on theatre or history or something? He shrugged again.
It's why I eat. My flesh cries a lot.
As in Dionysus, the god of Bacchae, wine and orgy, I said stiffly.
I chose one of your gods, not mine. Better not to buffle skate you.
Good grief. Do Hellcats have gods?
Most things do. Look suspiciously like themselves.
I wanted to have this conversation. Shazam was in an unusually lucid mood. Gods were a hot topic on my plate, and it was 8:01. I did not want Riordan in my flat. He'd have more time to look around, copy something else. Please be here when I get back, I told Shazam. I miss our cuddles. His smile was instant, enormous, and swallowed his head, all fangs and thin black lips, and there was that elusive nagging reminder of something I couldn't place again. Shazam smiling made me think of something else, something I'd once seen but apparently hadn't considered important enough to file away with a neat label.
Me too.
He bounded off the counter, stalked to the mattress, turned around 3 brisk times, and plopped heavily to the bed.
Can we put the mattress back up high soon? I like it there.
Soon as I get back. I see you, Shazmataz.
I see you too, Yee-Yee.
I tugged on opera-length black silk gloves, studded with diamonds, which ended where my sleeves began, grabbed my sword, slid it across my back, tucked 3 blades in a thigh sheath, and stalked out the door. 20. You drive me crazy like no one else. I went slowly down 4 flights of stairs. Not because of my heels, but because I was abruptly off kilter the moment I closed the door of Sanctuary and locked it behind me. Riordan was picking me up. I was wearing a dress. I had no bloody idea where we were going or what we were doing. Out of control on all counts. For 2 long years I'd been mistress of the empty megapod, dominatrix of every detail. There'd been no surprises. I'd not once lost hold on my emotions. Not even when I killed Bridget. I hadn't slumped into a puddle of grief and self-abasement, and I'd wanted to. That'd been one of my tougher things to box. I'd killed yet another innocent. But no matter what happened, I went on, steady and committed, doing what needed to be done, being what people needed me to be. And I dealt with however it fractured me. I was proud of myself for that. I considered it a sign of my maturity. Yet a few thoughts about him on the way to his club had whipped me into a frenzy of uncontrolled emotion, and I'd become a tornado, whirling dizzyingly about, dizzying even to me. I stopped, centered myself with a breathing kata, and only when I was composed did I resume descending. I wasn't about to repeat my earlier volatility. If he brought up the kiss, I'd shrug it off as PMS. Men use it against us all the time. If that didn't shut him up, I'd employ the hangry excuse. He knows how often I need to eat to function at peak performance, has seen me shaky and feverish. I rounded the final stairwell, expecting to find him parked outside in the Hummer. He was waiting at the bottom of the stairs, hand on the newel post, looking up. Looking incredible. Tall, dark, and the precise flavor of the danger I find so addictive. Standing there like we were going on a date or something. I was instantly assaulted by conflicting emotions. I'd dreamed of seeing him standing there, somewhere, anywhere in my world again, and I was so damned angry I couldn't process the complexity of it. I'm smart enough to know I can also be as emotionally myopic as Mr. Magoo is nearsighted. The more something matters to me, the less I understand how I feel about it. Mac used to help me with that. For the 100th time, I wished she were here to talk to. I missed her so much. You could have waited in the car, I said tonelessly.
I bloody well know what I can and can't do, and don't pull Jada voice on me. I came to see Danny tonight.
Riordan is beautiful. Not like Barron's, who's beautiful in a perfectly imperfect way. Far more animalistic than man. You see the beast first in Barron's. You have to hunt for it in Riordan, who pours a flawlessly human skin over his animal form, meticulously aware of precisely where each atom of his being is in relation to the world around him. He has a heightened, absolute awareness I covet and emulate. He's liquid grace when he moves. I'm damned close to it. I've admired him since the day I met him. Used to study him when he wasn't watching me. I once spent 8 infernal hours trapped in his office, watching his dark head bent over paperwork, absorbing every detail of his profile, trying to figure out some way to shatter that infernal calm and grace, make that controlled face explode into uncontrolled emotion, make him act like I always felt around him. It hadn't eluded me that the first man to draw my gaze after Dancer died, at 6 feet 4 inches and 240 pounds with short dark hair, resembled Riordan. There are two types of men I'm attracted to, and they're rare as hell. Brilliant, sexy, full of wonder, pure as wide open sky and easy to be around. Or brilliant, sexy, inhumanly strong, carved by ruthless experience and difficult to handle. I like extremes. Riordan was dark and elegant. His powerful body poured into a charcoal Versace suit, a subtly embossed white shirt, a silver and black tie that matched his eyes, wide cuff glinting at his wrist, the tips of intricate tattoos peeking above his crisp white collar, dark Italian shoes. He was as dichotomous as his club. Sophistication on the surface, primal beast beneath. His jaw was dusted with dark stubble. And, I inhaled lightly, he smelled good. I didn't remember him smelling so good. The wan light of the single bulb illuminating the foyer behind him shadowed the regal bone structure of his face. Primordial, polished, pain in the ass man that never fails to rattle me. Or make me feel painfully alive. I want him. He drives me batshit crazy. He held my gaze a long moment.
Beautiful by any standards, in any century, on any world, woman.
His eyes said. I willed my eyes blank. Emerald shallows lapping gently at a shore. Not a tsunami out of control. As I began to descend the last flight, he said,
What did you miss the most about me, Danny?
Aside from that dark velvet, exotically accented voice, his clear, unfiltered way of seeing me, his ability to kick my brain up into a higher gear, his endless challenges, and how he always seemed to understand what I was feeling, even when I didn't. Clever. I said coolly. Most implies that I missed many things. I didn't think about you at all.
You need to stop boxing the things that disturb you.
I narrowed my eyes. How I organize my brain is none of your business.
It is when I'm the recipient of the resultant chaos.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
When you refuse to think about an issue, it remains unchanged, in precisely the same state as you tucked it away.
Precisely the point of boxing it. The issue dies, can no longer affect you. It's a damned effective tactic.
Short term, yes. Long term, a recipe for disaster. When you next encounter whatever you boxed your feelings about, you're ambushed by repressed, unresolved emotion.
Your point eludes me, I said stiffly. It didn't, I just didn't like it. No one ever called me on my shit. I'd gotten used to that. I'd missed that about him. Even as I resented his logic for being so bloody logical.
If you'd thought about me while I was away, you wouldn't have been a perfect storm of oppositional desires at Chester's this morning.
Truth. Wasn't about to admit it. It had nothing to do with you. I was PMS and hungry. He smiled faintly.
I see. So that's how we're going to play it. Commando or thong?
My face screwed into an instant scowl. What? He laughed.
Ah, Danny. That's one of the many things I missed about you. When your eyes flash, your skin flushes, and you're even more fucking beautiful. I used to picture your face while I was gone, when you were on one of your rants, stalking, fierce and high-tempered. I missed it. Tell me something you missed about me. I must have slipped out of your box every now and then.
I gave him a stony look. He'd pictured my face while he was gone? Then why hadn't he called? I wasn't a woman to be softened with a few nice words after 2 bloody endless years of silence. 2 years in which he'd showed me precisely how little I meant to him. As I neared the bottom of the staircase, he said,
"We need a few rules."
I don't do rules. Not true. I had an elaborate set of my own. And certainly not yours.
Ours,
he corrected.
Mutually agreed upon. Rule number 6.
What are rules 1 through 5? Do I get to make those up? I had a list ready.
We'll get to those. I was merely making the point that this particular rule isn't the most important between us. The next time...
And, of course, you're the one who gets to decide what's most important.
You want to blow off steam, say the word. I've got a fully outfitted sparring gym at Chester's.
Level 7, boxing ring, every weapon imaginable. I exploded all your punching bags. I took your guns, too. Oh, and those cool studded leather gloves with the recessed blades.
Where we can glove up and spar, you little snoop, in private.
I was getting mad again. He sees right through me. He was right, and that pissed me off even more. Putting him in a mental compartment had indeed left me unprepared for his return. He was here now. But I was still stuck 2 years ago, in a cemetery, hurt and angry, with 2 years of additional hurt and anger heaped on top of it. I needed to address that quickly, and physical activity always helps me think. Fine, let's go now.
And forego a night with you in that dress? Not a chance. We'll have our date first.
People like you and me, and I use that term loosely in reference to you, don't date. And rule, definition, something you don't break and certainly not the first time out of the gate. Clearly no one but you gets to invoke the rules. Typical. You're always the only one allowed to make the decisions.
Ah, and now we're finally getting to your point.
He murmured. I descended the final step. No, we're not. And it's commando. Friction's a bitch when I freeze frame. Nothing under here but skin, babe. His laughter was soft, husky and dangerous.
Battle engaged, babe.
Raw current arced between us as I swept past him. I channeled that energy into a powerful, long-legged stride outside, feeling his gaze scorch my ass all the way to the car. And that pissed me off too. Not that he was staring at my ass. He should be. It looked terrific. The car. It was a matte black Ferrari. Sleek. Sexy,